Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, where we hear about the business of the casino entertainment industry from the people who make it happen. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we get together with Jeff Freeman, the president and CEO of the American Gaming Association, marking the beginning of its fifth year at the helm of the organization. The GGB podcast is brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the nation's leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos. Jeff Freeman was appointed president and CEO of the American Gaming Association in 2013, succeeding the founding CEO, Frank Fahrenkopf. Freeman immediately began transforming the AGA into an aggressive proponent of the gaming industry, changing the strategy of playing defense. Today, the AGA represents a positive image of the gaming industry to the world and has taken the lead in the effort to legalize sports betting in the U.S. Freeman talks about the inclusive nature of the AGA these days and how he believes that partnership and consensus makes the difference in the long run. He spoke with me in Las Vegas in October. Jeff Freeman, thanks for joining us on the podcast today. It's good to see you. We haven't done this for a while, so it's good to get together. It doesn't seem to be this long, but you're in your fifth year as president and CEO of the AGA. So let's go back to the beginning. Tell us what you found when you arrived and whether you believe the industry is more unified today than when you first got here.
It's funny you mention that. I talk to people in the industry, and they feel it's much longer than 5 years.
Yeah.
It's been torturous for most of them. Here's what stands out to me, and I think it's typical of anyone coming into a new role. Whatever you thought you knew in year one or year two, you didn't have a clue, right?
Mm-hmm.
You learn something new every year. Do finally feel like I'm beginning to get my arms around this industry and some of the great opportunities we have in front of us. You mentioned unification. That has certainly been a major priority of the AGA. I think that for any industry organization to be effective, the one requirement, the prerequisite to that, is a certain degree of unity among the membership. I think this industry has a lot of experience in fighting battles at the local level, the state level, in various countries around the world where a market's open and you're simply fighting for a license.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously unity is not necessary for fighting for a license. But unity usually is necessary for opening up a market.
Sure.
Unity usually is necessary for defending yourself from attack against attacks. Unity usually is necessary if you want to advance some good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we've placed such a premium on unity at
right.
this point in time. And I think it's paying off.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that we have brought in nearly the entire commercial sector, we represent more than 90% of all commercial gaming revenue. We represent more than 95% of all supplier gaming revenue. And at this point, we represent more than a third of all tribal gaming revenue. We don't do that for the sake of doing it. We do that because with that unity comes power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why this industry was able to fend off the IRS thoughtless proposal
mm-hmm.
to lower the slot tax threshold and track players. It's why we were able to fend off the effort to eliminate resort fees. It's
mm-hmm.
why we've been able to inform and fend off misguided notions within FinCEN regarding our industry's commitment to money laundering compliance. It's because of that unity. And that same unity is what it's going to take to go on offense
yeah.
and to open up the sports betting market to other states around the country, to increase the slot tax threshold, something that we think is important and badly needed given that that standard was set in the late 1970s.
Mm-hmm.
All of these opportunities are made possible by unity. It is a continued focus of the AGA. It should be a fundamental element of any industry association to do its level best to rally the interests across the industry.
Great. Let's go straight to that sports betting issue. That's been your major initiative over the last year. Obviously, people are waiting for the Supreme Court decision. Do you have any indication which way that's going to go at this point?
Sports betting has certainly been a high priority for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big opportunity for us. We're the American Gaming Association. We're not the Sports Betting Association. But we can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
This is an opportunity to grow the market by billions of dollars.
Right.
And we are very much focused on that with a two-track strategy, one through Congress and one through the courts. We certainly encouraged the Supreme Court to take this case. We rallied 20 states to support the state of New Jersey to overturn PASPA. You know, states like Texas and Utah that signed on to that brief, states that do not have casino gaming that agree that the federal government has overreached here, are on the side of New Jersey. I think that bodes well for the outcome of this case. We see three potential outcomes. Two of those are good, varying degrees of good. I think the least likely outcome at this point is that the Supreme Court simply concurs with the lower courts and tells them they've done a great job. That's not what the Supreme Court's in the business of doing. It's possible, but I think it's the least likely. The two more likely outcomes are, one, simply declaring PASPA unconstitutional, which would instantaneously turn this thing over to the states to regulate sports betting the same way they choose or choose not to regulate other forms of casino-style gaming, or more of a nuanced position, and many believe this is the most likely outcome, a nuanced position that sides with New Jersey's workaround and really throws the ball back into Congress's court to address this issue once and for all. If we had to lean one way, I think we see that as probably a more likely outcome, which, again, this industry is well positioned to address because of the great work we've been doing as an industry over the past several years to bring the industry onto the same page on this issue, to work with the leagues, to work with law enforcement, broadcasters, and others, so we're all prepared to inform what Congress does if indeed it gets this case in the near future.
You know, it always seems that if they're going to just support what lower courts say, they wouldn't even take the case. When the Supreme Court takes a case, it's usually some sort of constitutional issue there. And so it would seem like one of those two would be more likely than just throwing it back.
I certainly lean on our constitutional scholars to provide that opinion, and that indeed is their opinion, that the likely outcome here is something that disrupts the trajectory of PASPA from where it's been. I think that's favorable for the industry, and I think it's critical that if you're in the industry right now, you are planning for a change to this law. You're looking at your market opportunities. You're looking at the companies with whom you do business. You're looking at the states in which you do business and how you can encourage them to get out ahead of this opportunity that's coming down the road. I would strongly discourage people in the industry from sitting back and waiting to see what the court does. This is a period of opportunity, and we should take advantage of that.
I want to talk about your relationship with the tribes later, but in terms of this issue, there seems to be a little bit of a split in Indian country on how to support this. We did a story in our November issue on the different views in Indian country. What's your perception of where the tribes stand on this?
I think that there are a number of important questions being asked, and I think what there may be is a lot of education and information that needs to be shared, as well as a few people who would like there to be controversy. Certainly come across a few of those.
For sure.
At the end of the day, I think as the information gets shared, tribes and commercial casinos agree, we don't want the federal government dictating to us what games we can and cannot provide.
Right.
So I think we have, in large part, common thinking on that issue. It's an education effort. I understand that. We have about 240 different tribal jurisdictions in this country. We've got 23 states with commercial gaming. We've got a lot of different parties out there gathering information at different periods of time. The hard job that we have is to educate and bring the information that we think at the end of the day will yield a similar result, and that is get the federal government out of the way. So I'm very optimistic as to where we are with both the commercial industry and the tribal industry. Contrary to what some would like to believe, we've got a lot more in common than we do that divides us.
Okay, great. So you've been able to form some really unique partnerships with both public and private organizations over this issue and also on other issues. How important are those partnerships to the AGA?
Partnerships are critical to any industry. Whatever industry you're in, you want to go and fight your battle with allies by your side. Partnerships are particularly important in industries that have not always been appreciated for the benefits they have to offer. And casino gaming is certainly one of those. With an industry like ours, it's important that we combine our interests with those of law enforcement, with those of state and community organizations, mayors and others, it's critical that when we push our efforts in Washington at the state level, we do it with allies by our side. It has been a hallmark of everything we've done at the AGA to date. We've invested significant energy and resources into educating and recruiting those allies. We're pleased with the relationships we've developed. You know, I think you look at our Illegal Gambling Advisory Board, where you have the former chief of police, former Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis, mm-hmm. where you have Tim Murphy, the former deputy director of the FBI. The relationships we're building on illegal gambling are paying off in a wide variety of other areas. They pay off on sports betting. They pay off after the shooting in Las Vegas, and both of those resources are there to help the industry recover. They pay off in so many ways because as our industry is understood, our industry gains allies, our industry gains champions, and our industry is stronger for it.
Great, great. So, you know, in conjunction with that, you've developed some really proactive programs, you know, starting with Get to Know Gaming, you know, diversity programs on both the employee side and the supplier side, you know, small businesses. You just did a great report on small business. How does that resonate with the public's perception of the industry?
You know, I've worked in a host of different industries. I'm by no means a gaming expert, mm-hmm. and I'm in awe of the people I meet in this industry who know the business inside and out. My experience is really working in different industries, many of whom would have been considered black hat industries. And those black hat industries always claim that they've got a good story to tell. Mm-hmm. And in my time there, we always made a good story to tell.
Right.
That's never been more easy than it is in gaming, mm-hmm. where the story speaks for itself.
Sure.
And that is the real distinction between this industry and so many others. You have the case studies in countless communities from coast to coast about the relationships we build with the local community, the nonprofits we support, the jobs we provide, the small businesses that succeed because of what gaming provides. Mm-hmm. This is such an opportunity for us. I think we know in this industry that perception drives public policy. And if we want to change public policy, and by gosh, there is a lot of public policy we want to change. There's a lot of antiquated public policy that affects this industry. We have to inform perceptions. We have to create a more favorable perception of this industry. And simply telling our story and using allies to do that is the best thing we can do. Get to Know Gaming has been an important step. I think we're getting ready to really invigorate that program with more resources, more ideas, more research, more focus, because enhancing the perception of this industry is simply the prerequisite to creating a better environment for our companies to operate.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. So when you got to the AGA, you started to expand the membership. I know there wasn't even a membership department in the old AGA. You've reached out into peripheral industries that serve the gaming industry. Why did you do that, and what do you think that has brought to the AGA?
I think we're in a day and age where if you're going to claim to represent an industry, you better darn well represent the industry. Mm-hmm. So we recognized early on that while this industry was built on a foundation of the Las Vegas Strip, it was critical that we supplemented that with everything else this industry had to offer. Mm-hmm. Today, we have so much of that unity that we sought. We've got a lot more work to do. Mm-hmm. There are other corners of the industry that we need to bring into the AGA. But I think today we are so much more powerful. We are so much more informed. We are so much more forward-looking than we've ever been before. You know, when you look at years past, and my predecessor, Frank Farrakhoff, and I have talked about this, what brought the industry together was the threat, mm-hmm. the threat of a federal tax, or the threat of somebody else's bad idea. And make no mistake, it's a threat that brings every industry together. What I see more and more today is what is bringing us together is opportunity. How do we go and open up new markets? How do we go and reform some of the bad policies that have been put in place? I think any organization, any industry that is focused first and foremost on opportunity is an industry that is a strong and healthy industry. I think we're seeing that at the AGA. I'm excited about the opportunities we still have in front of us when it comes to growing membership, when it comes to representing a larger swath of this industry. As we speak with one voice, this industry will become increasingly powerful.
Well, one of the areas you have expanded in has been adding some of the large tribes that have major casinos. What was the strategy behind that?
You know, as I said earlier, I'm strongly of the belief that we have more in common than we do that divides us. Mm-hmm. I'm not naive. I certainly recognize some of the challenges between commercial gaming and tribal gaming. But let's face it, we've got plenty of challenges between commercial gaming and commercial gaming. At the end of the day, when it comes to the IRS, when it comes to money laundering compliance, when it comes to opening up sports, when it comes to some of these big issues, we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. Now, really what inspired us to go down this road, in addition to intellectual alignment, were simple political facts. The simple political facts are this. One, most people on Capitol Hill, most people in the public, make no distinction between a commercial casino and a tribal casino. Mm-hmm. It's all a casino to them.
Right.
And if we're going to try to convince them of some distinction there, we're going to be swimming upstream every day, and we are going to fail to capitalize on the opportunities in front of us. The other aspect of this is that there are strong political relationships. There are certainly strong political relationships within the commercial sector. There are extraordinarily strong political relationships within the tribal sector, particularly at the federal level. And I am of the opinion, our leadership is of the opinion, that if we can work together and leverage the relationships that we have, focus less on what divides us and more on what we have in common, we're going to be able to grow our businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. At the same time, though, there's still some clashes between commercial and tribal. For example, in Connecticut, where MGM wants to build a casino and he doesn't want the tribes to build a third casino. How do you handle those kind of things? Do you just kind of back away from that? Is there no position the AGA takes?
Yeah, the same way we handle the situation in Philadelphia, where Parks and Cordish have tried to open, and now looking successfully, open a third casino south of the city. And Rush Street has tried to prevent that from happening, along with others. The same way we deal with these battles around the country. We focus on areas of consensus. We focus on what brings the industry together. We have no shortage of issues where we are aligned as an industry, and we will continue to focus on those issues.
Okay. Well, one issue that was a little contentious when you first came on was online gaming. Just last week, we saw Pennsylvania approve online gaming, becoming the fourth state in the nation to do that, and it looks like it's going to continue to expand. Is the AGA going to change your position on that at any point, or make a new position, or how's that going to work?
Two things I'll say about the issue of online gaming. And as you said, it was a big issue when I joined in 2013, and the AGA did have a public position of supporting a federal poker-only solution. That was a flawed position. It was a flawed position then. It's a flawed position now. And the AGA, given the lack of consensus in the industry, has taken more of a neutral position. So two things I'd say about it. One, I wish I could put that genie back in the bottle. I wish we could do that process over again, because I think that the sports betting experience is informative as to what can happen when you're patient, when you keep your discussions internal, you do the due diligence necessary to determine if you have common cause. I am of the belief that with the right information, with the right process, there is greater common cause in the industry on online gaming. But we didn't go through that process at the time. And I just don't think you put the genie back in the bottle at this point in time, number one. Number two, the other big issue in online gaming that I think often gets forgotten is people certainly know the biggest proponents of online gaming, and they know the biggest opponents of online gaming. And they assume that the industry isn't succeeding or isn't engaged because of the opponents or the proponents. I would say the biggest factor to the lack of industry engagement on online gaming are the entities in the middle. And that's where most of the industry is.
Right.
Most of the industry doesn't know what it wants to see in online gaming. Most of the industry isn't yet convinced of the business opportunity there.
Right.
And it's because of that neutrality of most of the industry, rather than the people on either end of the spectrum opposing or pushing online gaming, that we have not been able to see any consensus to date, and why I don't think you will see a rapid change in that position, at least specific to poker or other casino-style games.
Well, you know, if your sports betting initiative is successful, this is going to come to the fore pretty quickly, because in Europe, as you know, it's sports betting is the largest percentage of online gaming. Same thing in Nevada, where we have the online mobile apps now as well, and Pennsylvania has a a part of their bill that allows that as well. So, yep. You know, you'll have to consider how that changes.
Well, there was a nuance to my last answer. Hmm. I don't foresee a change in the industry's position on online gaming, at least with respect to poker or other casino-style games.
Okay.
Sports could be the difference maker.
Yeah.
And you're right. And when you look at here in Nevada, more than two-thirds of the handle is currently done via online channels. When you look at the online gameplay in Europe, particularly the United Kingdom, well over 50% of all play is sports. Mm-hmm. So that is where the interest is for the most part on online. And that's a bridge we're going to have to cross. Mm-hmm. At this point in time, our focus is on PASPA. PASPA is a law that blocks any type of even brick-and-mortar sports betting operation outside Nevada. We've got to deal with that first, and we'll cross that other bridge when we come to it.
Okay, great. So, you know, one of the we had G2E open this year, unfortunately, with the terrible shooting at Mandalay Bay. Shook everybody to the core. Still, the show went on, and it turned out to be, you know, a terrific opportunity for the industry to come together. What was some of your thinking when you heard that happened and you knew the show was coming up, and what was your reaction?
I couldn't agree with you more that it was a terrific response from the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been more grateful that the industry was together in one place at one time than when that horrendous event took place. You know, listen, when it happened, I think the first thing everybody did was focus on the safety of their family, of their teams, and make sure that that everyone was secure. After that, yes, attention quickly turned to what is the next step with G2E, how does the industry respond, and I can admit that I don't think there was ever a moment where cancellation was seriously considered. This was a unique event, G2E, the industry event in the beating heart of the industry, Las Vegas. It was critical that that event went on. I'm grateful that it did. Our numbers remained very, very strong. I just saw this week the latest numbers, and G2E was essentially flat, this despite that horrendous event that we know did discourage some people from attending. So I think the industry really rallied to the occasion. It was certainly somber. It was a week like no other, but it did rally the industry together, and I think it's important that we keep that focus going forward. I was just talking with someone who is now focused on their gaming company on a mental health effort for those, here we are about 6 weeks out from the event, for those that are still reeling because of family members or things that they saw. Now is the time when people probably need more help than ever. I think it's critical that all of us across the industry realize that this is an industry-wide issue, an industry-wide opportunity to help those in need. That's certainly a focus for us at AGA, and we'll continue to carry that message with our friends across the industry.
Well, I think it was good that everybody was together. It's very comforting for people to be together. And you know, at first when you thought, oh, how could we go on, we went on and we came out of it stronger. So I thought it was very well done by your team.
I appreciate hearing that. You know, it's one of those moments, again, where the last thing you want is to be by yourself. It's one of those moments where there's strength in numbers. There's strength in being with your colleagues and friends. And I couldn't have been more proud with the way the entire industry responded that week to the support that was given to MGM in particular. But there are so many companies provided. Tropicana, the closest property to where everything took place and the effects on them. To see the industry rally together was something that made me immensely proud.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, several years ago at G2E, you mentioned this, that the head of FinCEN showed up to speak and criticized the industry for a lack of transparency in the financial transactions. But just this past year, the industry got kudos for being very transparent. How did that reversal come about?
If you go back, it was September of 2013 at G2E, where the former head of FinCEN came and essentially said that, "I don't think your industry takes its anti-money laundering compliance responsibilities seriously." Less than 3 years later, she left FinCEN, and when we exchanged notes, her message to me was, "Your industry has a good story to tell." I think there are a couple things that were critical to that rapid turnaround. One was the industry coming together in a united fashion and speaking with one voice, and speaking, not just speaking, but being engaged. There might have been a time where when our industry heard someone from Washington say what the head of FinCEN said, that our response would have been, you don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Our response would have been, leave us alone. Right. Get out of here.
Right.
How dare you come into our backyard and say this? Even if that was our first thought, in this instance, our industry did exactly the right thing, which was engage and do so in a consensus way. So I think the ability to speak with one voice as an industry was critical. The second thing was we really lifted the veil on the industry. I was with executives from FinCEN when they went into certain VIP rooms around town where they were given briefings on what chip walking is and what the other issues are so that they could learn how our industry responded. And I can tell you that FinCEN was not just informed. They were making comments about how they wish other industries were providing the same type of peek behind the curtain as to how they operate. So I just think our industry really embraced a progressive approach with FinCEN, and I think it's that it paid off, number one, and it's a roadmap, I think, for what we need to do going forward. Be engaged, speak with one voice, think in a progressive fashion. This industry is in a very good place, and we've got, as I keep saying, great opportunities ahead of us. If we stay together, if we engage in the right way, we're going to be able to seize those opportunities.
Great. All right, one more question. What are you looking to accomplish in the next couple of years at AGA?
So we just completed, and very excited about this, we just completed our strategic plan 2020, where we've looked out to 2020. Who do we want to be as we grow up as an organization? What are some of the new opportunities in front of us? And there are four pillars that define where the AGA is going. One, at the federal level, I really want us to shift from defense to offense. Mm-hmm. Always look for opportunities to grow the industry. We damn well better to defend the industry and make sure nothing happens that would harm the industry. We're doing that right now on tax reform, where there are still some bad ideas being proposed. How do we supplement that defense with an incredible offense? That's a big focus for us. The second thing is, as I referenced earlier, we want to take get-to-know gaming to new heights. There is no doubt that perception drives policy. Mm-hmm. We've got to have the best research. We have to have the best information sharing. We have to have the best resources and tools for the industry to use to share the story of what this industry is all about in Las Vegas, in Cleveland, in Pittsburgh, and in every other community in which we're doing business. It is the AGA's responsibility to provide the industry with the best mechanisms to champion this industry. Thirdly, we all know that so much of the policy we confront as an industry is not at the federal level, but at the state and local level.
Right.
AGA wants to be a greater resource to our members at that level, and we are launching an effort to better understand exactly what it is our members need and figure out how we can help better inform expansion discussions, drive a more progressive regulatory environment, and ensure that the legislation that affects this industry is cognizant of the contributions of the industry, of what's important when it comes to innovation and reinvestment in the industry. So state-level focus is a big thing for us. And then the final area, because each of the first three things I mentioned are all about advocacy and advocating on the industry's behalf, the final thing we want to really break out and build upon for the industry is leveraging this newfound unified industry to enhance education, to enhance information sharing, to create new opportunities. You know, there are a lot of folks who would like access to this industry as we begin to come together. Folks on the payment side of the business,
right.
Folks on the consulting side of the business, folks who have a lot of information from other industries. Mm-hmm. How do we, the AGA, help to bring that into this industry and utilize a lot of the resources that are out there that will now be available to us because they see the industry rallying under one tent? That's something we want to take advantage of. I mentioned those four things. There's one thing I left out that I think is critically important, and we're talking a lot about this at the board level of our organization, and that's the issue of responsible gaming, an issue that I know we're going to tackle in a much more assertive fashion in the years ahead. Mm-hmm. I'm strongly of the opinion that the politics of problem gambling lead to public policies that prevent our industry from innovating, mm-hmm. that prevent our industry from providing our customer with what it is that they want. And so much of the politics of problem gambling drive policies that are completely irrelevant to mm-hmm. the customer they're trying to help.
Right.
You know, not too long ago, there was a debate in one state about whether or not ATM should be 15 feet from slot machines.
Right.
The industry said, well, let's do 7 feet. They compromised at 11 feet. Does anyone in their right mind think that has anything to do with helping someone mm-hmm. in need?
Right.
That is in any way informed by science as to assisting the person who might have a gambling disorder? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
We need to, as an industry, have a stronger point of view as to what policies work in this place. We need to demand accountability in this place, in this space, and we need to create an environment where all our commitment to responsible gambling is understood, embraced, and positioned us to drive more progressive public policies in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's encouraging to see a big company like MGM getting into this GameSense program, which I saw in action in Massachusetts. I was very impressed with it. It doesn't prohibit anybody from gambling. It helps you understand the games better, and I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens at the MGM when they do this.
Yeah, whether GameSense is or is not the right solution
right.
Is to be determined.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I'd say on this, though, is I think the issue of responsible gaming is one that should be an industry-wide issue.
Right.
I hope this isn't an issue where companies compete against one another based on their responsible gaming programs.
Right.
This is an area where we all have the same interests at heart,
mm-hmm.
Where we would do well to embrace a lot of the same solutions in order to inform regulators of our commitment and unlock new opportunities. I do fear that if each, because I think that's the environment we're in today, each company has their own responsible gaming mm-hmm. programs. We're not getting any aggregate benefits from that as an industry. It's not changing the course of this debate.
Right.
We need to figure out what changes the course of the mm-hmm. debate. I think that's an industry-wide response.
Great. Well, Jeff, thanks for the time. We won't take this long between interviews from now on.
I hope not.
There's so much going on. We want to see what's happening and get your feedback on your progress.
Thank you, Roger.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of the GTV Podcast, brought to you by iGamingPlayer.com, the leading affiliate marketing service for land-based and online casinos in North America. To learn more about the gaming industry, visit GGBMagazine.com, or for a weekly update, visit GGBNews.com. Follow us on Twitter at Global Gaming Biz, or on LinkedIn and Facebook at Global Gaming Business Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week on the Global Gaming Business Podcast.